For the director of music, for Jeduthun, a psalm of David. I said, I will watch my ways and keep my tongue from sin. I will put a muzzle on my mouth while in the presence of the wicked. So I remained utterly silent, not even saying anything good. But my anguish increased. My heart grew hot within me. While I meditated, the fire burned. Then I spoke with my tongue. Show me, Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting my life is. You have made my days a mere handbreadth. The span of my years is as nothing before you. Everyone is but a breath, even those who seem secure. Surely everyone goes around like a mere phantom. In vain they rush around, heaping up wealth without knowing who it will finally be. But now, Lord, what do I look for? My hope is in you. Save me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of fools. I was silent. I would not open my mouth, for you are the one who has done this. Remove your scourge from me. I am overcome by the blow of your hand. When you rebuke and discipline anyone for their sin, you consume their wealth like a moth. Surely everyone is but a breath. Hear my prayer, Lord. Listen to my cry for help. Do not be deaf to my weeping. I dwell with you as a foreigner, a stranger, as all my ancestors were. Look away from me, that I may enjoy life again, before I depart and am no more.
It's brilliant to be here. Gospel partnership is a glorious thing. We have one gospel hope, we have one saviour. We have one church name, Christ Church. And it's brilliant to be here. A few months back, I was speaking with another dad, and we were comparing notes on dad fails, the moment when the dad has massively misjudged the danger level, and the kid ends up injured. Most of our stories involve playgrounds, and the other dad, he was telling me about a swing moment he was having, and the cry came from the swing, higher, higher, and so he didn't want to let his 2-year-old down, so he sort of pushed really hard, and then a few seconds later, his 2-year-old could be seen sailing backwards across the playground. That is a dad fail. But I always struggled with roundabouts in the park. You know the ones? There we go. Roundabouts. Because slow-moving roundabouts aren't much fun for anyone. Basically, a roundabout is there to go quickly. And so you look at it and you think, well, how can I get this thing going really fast? I'll show the other dads in the park a thing or two about giving their kids a good time. And you give it an almighty heave, and the kids go flying off in every direction. Actually, a little video clip, hopefully, which gives you a sense of it. That's the way it works. That is a dad fail. And it's roundabouts that have been on my mind the last few weeks, because as I've been looking at this psalm, I think roundabouts give us a little picture of what is going on in this psalm. Let me explain. If you're on a roundabout, where is the place of greatest danger on the roundabout? Where are you in most danger? On the edge. Why is that, Richard Hammond, who taught me everything I know about engineering? Centripetal acceleration. Thank you. There you go. You didn't know you're getting a physics lesson today. The danger is on the outside. Where is the point of safety on the roundabout? in the middle. You see, if you're in the middle of a roundabout, you might get dizzy, but you're not going to fly off. And that's what we've got in Psalm 39. This psalm sort of represents the roundabout of life. It's wonderfully real and honest. On the outskirts of the psalm, right at the edges, we see the struggles of life. But as we work our way into the middle, we will find the place of safety, comfort, and security. I think that's how we're meant to see this psalm. So we're going to start on the outskirts, and we're going to work our way in together. Three headings as we look at this together. Not particularly complicated. Struggle, life is hard. Wisdom, life is short. And hope, God is there. So we're going to start on the outskirts of the psalm with struggle. Life is hard. And we're going to look at verses 1 to 3 and then 12 to 13. You can see what we're doing there on the outskirts. Let me read the first three verses again. And listen to David's honesty. That's who wrote this psalm. This is King David, probably right at the end of his life. He has been a great king. He's the greatest military ruler Israel has ever known. Strong and powerful man. But now his body is failing him. And there's feuding all around him. His enemies seem to be prospering. And David writes these words, verse 1, for the director of music, for Jeduthun, who was a famous singer of the day, appointed by David, for Jeduthun, a psalm of David. I said, I will watch my ways and keep my tongue from sin. I will put a muzzle on my mouth while in the presence of the wicked. So I remained utterly silent, not even saying anything good. But my anguish increased. My heart grew hot within me. While I meditated, the fire burned. Then I spoke with my tongue. As you listen to those words, you can hear David's frustration as he writes. Here is a man who... he's got something to say. He's desperate to speak, but he knows he shouldn't. He doesn't just want to blurt out his raw emotion. So he's saying to himself, put a muzzle on it, David. Keep quiet. Don't dishonor God with your rantings. But then by the time we get to verse 12, David can contain himself no longer. Have a listen, verse 12. Hear my prayer, Lord. Listen to my cry for help, and do not be deaf to my weeping. I dwell with you as a foreigner, a stranger, as all my ancestors were. You hear the anguish? But it's these words that have really troubled me most. Verse 13, where David cries out to God, look away from me, that I may enjoy life again before I depart and am no more. You hear that? This is King David. He's a good guy. He's the best king Israel had ever had. But here, right at the end of his life, right in the midst of painful struggles, he's yelling out to God and he's saying, get lost. Look away from me, God. Let me just enjoy life once more before my life ends. As I read these words, I tried so hard to make the verse say something else. I wasn't happy with this. Perhaps the away could mean towards. That would be better. Look towards me, that I may enjoy life again. That feels a better way for the psalm to end. But it doesn't mean that. Literally, this is saying, look away from me, that I might brighten up, that I might smile before I go and am not. The psalm doesn't have a happy ending. In fact, if you look more closely, have a look at verse 10. David's very clearly blaming God for his painful circumstances. He says to God, remove your scourge from me. I'm overcome by the blow of your hand. Here's a scourge. That's how David is feeling, utterly beaten up. Life is fearful for him. You see, this is life at the edge of the roundabout, feeling hard-pressed and in great danger. Now, I don't know how these words are for you as you read them. As I've looked at them this week, I found them both encouraging and fearful. I'm encouraged because this is King David. He is a great man of God. The Bible tells us that very clearly. And yet he seems to experience life like me. He understands my life. He left me looking back at points in my life where I felt utterly defeated, desperate, helpless. I guess you've had those moments. Maybe you're in those moments now. It's a struggle. Life can be brutally tough. David knew that. But actually, better than that, God knows that. I mean, think about it. Aren't these extraordinary words for God to have captured in his word to us, the Bible? Why not just arrange to have this psalm cut out? 149 psalms? No one would have known what we were missing. This is your greatest king ranting at you. He's complaining that you're worse than useless. Why keep that in? Surely it's because he wants us to know that he knows. That he knows that life hurts. That he is not blind to our pain. As David is crying out to God, "Hear my prayer, Lord. Listen to my cry for help. Do not be deaf to my weeping." Do you see what we have in front of us? God has captured every word of David's cry. God was not deaf. He did listen. And in capturing these words, he's encouraging us to cry out to him, even in the midst of life's great struggles, pain and hurt. He is not a God who needs wrapping in cotton wool. Cast your burdens onto him because he cares for you, the Apostle Peter urges us. You can tell God. These are encouraging words for us, but they are also fearful words because David's heart is my heart. If King David can get to the point where he's saying, "Look, God, get lost. You're doing more harm than good." If his struggles can make him say that, then why not me? See, I might not feel like that today, but I need to hear the message of this psalm. Where do you go when you're on the edge of the roundabout? When life is crazy tough, when God seems to be worse than useless, where do you go? Well, the psalm is encouraging us to head in toward the centre of the roundabout. So let's take a step inwards, and we'll look at our second heading. Wisdom. Life is short. And I'm going to reread verses 4 to 6, and then 9 to 11. Listen for the repeating theme in these words. Verse 4. "Show me, Lord, my life's end, and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting my life is. You have made my days a mere hand's breadth. The span of my years is as nothing before you. Everyone is but a breath, even those who seem secure. Surely everyone goes around like a mere phantom. In vain they rush about, heaping up wealth, without knowing whose it will finally be." And then jump down to verse 9. "I was silent. I would not open my mouth. For you are the one who has done this. Remove your scourge from me. I am overcome by the blur of your hand. When you rebuke and discipline anyone for their sin, you consume their wealth like a moth. Surely everyone is but a breath." You can hear the repeated refrain there, can't you? Everyone is but a breath. Everyone is but a breath. The average breath lasts 4 seconds, and then the breath is gone, dispersed into the vast mass of air around us. On a cold winter's day, it's sort of beautifully pictured for you, isn't it? You breathe out, and you can see the breath for 1 or 2 seconds, and then it disappears. Everyone is but a breath. Now, you sort of want to say, well, that's not exactly a great help. Talking about the struggles of life, and we're moving in towards the middle of the roundabout, and I was looking for something a little more comforting and secure. Life is hard, Life is short. Well, that's really cheered us up. Please don't switch off. As I sat and looked at this psalm, as I prayed it through, as I started to see, this is exactly what we need to hear. Everyone is but a breath. It's not the place of comfort and security. This truth isn't the destination, but it is the route to comfort and security. Life is short. This thing which you and I are experiencing now, we call it life. It's the only reality we can sensually experience. But it is fleeting. Everyone is but a breath. And wisdom for life comes from knowing that. It comes when we get that. It's so easy to live life thinking, well, I'll make that change tomorrow. Today's too busy. I'll worry about matters of eternity tomorrow. Got other priorities today. But do you hear David's urging? Everyone is but a breath. Life is fleeting. I was remembering my time working up on the science park with the lovely Richard Hammond, and I loved it. I loved that job. I was busy trying to sort of move up the corporate ladder, and I had no concept of the fleetingness of life. Felt like it would go on forever and ever. And then I had a great friend, and one day I was traveling. I was in America when I received the news. He'd been diagnosed with a very serious form of leukemia. He was my age, three young kids. Our lives matched up almost exactly, apart from the fact that he was a brilliant surgeon, gifted musician, and talented sportsman. His wife, same name as my wife. His eldest son, same age, same name. Then he had another son. I have another son. Then he had a daughter. Our lives were paralleled. And he died. And he died age 32. He died loving Jesus. It didn't mean it wasn't awful. But actually, it was a very profound moment for me. Everyone is but a breath. Everyone is but a breath. As I arrived here this morning, just checked my mobile and found out that overnight a good friend, 10 years older than me, a good friend died last night of a heart attack. Everyone is but a breath. We're meant to read this and be asking ourselves, how are we living life? Have we got this? Have we understood that the fleeting nature of what this is that we're doing now? Or are we caught on the treadmill of living for today, believing that tomorrow will never come? It's so easy to do, and we don't realize we've been doing it until the treadmill stops, and we say, well, where did all those years go? David says, surely everyone goes around like a mere phantom. In vain they rush about, heaping up wealth, without knowing whose it will finally be. That's a pretty profound danger in Cambridge, isn't it? House prices sky high. So, I mean, of course, we've got to work crazy hard to save up, to get the mortgage, to get the house. And then we work a bit harder to get a bigger mortgage, to get a bigger house. 30-year mortgage, but it's okay, we'll get there. And finally we get there. Mortgage paid off. The house is mine. And we realise everyone is but a breath. Where did it go? What was I doing? Life is hard. The psalm doesn't hide away from that. But life is short. David's pleading with God. He's saying, help me understand the brevity of life. Help me number my days. What are we living for? What are our goals in life? Struggle. Life is hard. Wisdom. Life is short. And then finally, we head right to the center. Hope. God is there. These are great verses. Have a look at verses 7 and 8 with me. They're key verses in understanding the message to this psalm. Verse 7, but now, Lord, what do I look for? My hope is in you. Save me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of fools. That's where David's place of comfort and security is in this psalm. It's not easy to get to the middle of the roundabout when it's spinning fast. Everything is forcing you outwards. It's much easier to stay at the edge. Life is hard. But the structure of this psalm is urging us to pull ourselves inwards, to let the gospel of Jesus Christ pull us inwards, to recognize the fleetingness of life, that this is not the eternal reality. What you and I are experiencing here this morning is not the eternal reality. There is more. And with that recognition, we get to the hope. With a life that's hard, with a life that's short, what is our one hope? Well, it's just a very simple hope. David, in his great struggles, he declares, "But now, Lord, what do I look for? My hope is in you." You see, in his pain, he asks God to turn away from him. "Go away, God. Just let me enjoy life." But in this moment of hope, David turns towards God. Life is short, but in his hope, he looks beyond this life to a life which isn't fleeting, but which is everlasting. Life is hard. David is weak, but in his hope, he looks to a God whose strength is made perfect in weakness. And he declares, "My hope is in you, God." Those are not easy words to say in the mess of life, in the midst of a struggle, the roundabout spinning. But actually, can you see that David's heart is set in this direction, that the troubles of life knock it and cause his life to spin, that the compass of his life is sort of spinning round, but his compass always ends up pointing in this direction? My hope is in you, God. That's why the Bible holds him up as such an example to us. That's why the Psalms are so helpful, because we see the compass spinning and then we see the compass of David's life landing. Not a perfect life, but a life that keeps returning to this hope. My hope is in you, God. A God who knows our struggles, who does hear, who does care, who forgives when we wander, who comforts when we hurt. My hope is in you, God. And one of the things God has been teaching me over the past few years is that when I settle down to read the Bible and to turn to my God in prayer, the God who hears my every prayer, as I do that, it's just starting to dawn on me that moment is not all about today. It's not all about the here and now. So as I read God's word, the Bible, as I pray to the Creator God, a big part of what I'm doing is setting the compass of my life, training my heart. My hope is in you, God. I'm preparing my life for the day when I find myself on the outside of the roundabout. You might have got up this morning and thought, you know, everything's great. Everything's going well. God is good. I don't really need to read the Bible today. Not really much to say to you today, God. Ticking along just fine, thanks. You can easily get caught in that mindset. Psalm 39 is teaching us to say, prepare your heart for the day of disaster. Teach your heart in every situation to turn to God, to know humble dependence on him. Because the day of disaster will come. Everyone is but a breath. And we want to share David's hope. In fact, wonderfully, we can go beyond David's hope. David's hope was based on the character of God that he knew, a faithful God. Same character of God for us, but wonderfully, God's made his character even clearer for us, hasn't he? Right at the centre of that roundabout, there is a wooden cross. A cross where where God himself, in the person of his Son Jesus Christ, stretched out his arms, and he died for you, and he died for me. And 3 days later, the empty grave. David never knew about the empty tomb, but you and I do. And it promises that this life is fleeting, but real life, new life, everlasting life, that is what we're living for. The cross of Jesus Christ, it tells us, God knows the pain of this world. I know that life hurts. I've been there. He says it to us. But there is hope. And Psalm 39 simply says to us, will that be your hope? Will you teach your heart today, this day,